hit the United States. And then when he went up to Nebraska someplace, he bought a family Bible, and it's all written in Swedish.
Oh, yeah.
But there's the tree is in there, and right. we're able to, and he started a new one. Uh-huh. And it's like he left his past behind him. He had no idea. We found out why later on, talking to this fellow out in California. His wife and son died on the boat coming over.
Oh, yeah.
So he hit the United States all alone and started a new family.
Right. You know, it doesn't take long for that information, if you don't bring it with you and translate it forward, it disappears or it gets misinterpreted and after a couple generations. But grab yourself some pizza.
You got enough to feed a horse here.
This is our food for the next 2 or 3 days. You know, actually, it goes pretty fast in this house.
I've only been on a couple of group hunts, and once I went out to Shaw Park with just Jen and Matt and the Mad Chef. And we're out in the park, and Matt's a gung-ho, and he's heading down trails. I said, Matt, no, it's over this way, it's on this. Well, this one's heading in the right way. No, plan it out beforehand. You know which trails to go on.
I'll find my way back eventually, but it doesn't mean I'll always go right to my car. I mean, like,
right.
Oh, this is the road, and my car's there a half a mile. Just
right.
Down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gone to any great lengths for walking in that because of my weight and my diabetic. My feet are not too good. I take it easy, and I do the short distances. Do you get out in cash with them?
Yeah, not
all
the time.
She doesn't have a name on GC.com, but she'll tag along quite often.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're using her to cheat and get more for yourself. Right?
She's my navigator.
I wish I had somebody. My wife doesn't want to do it. It took me 50 finds before I ran even into somebody else in the woods. The first meeting or group thing I went to was a summer picnic in White Cliff. The one in the sinkhole.
Yeah.
The second ammo box.
Just another ammo box in the woods.
I was in there, I bet, 4 times. Couldn't find it. And watching what everybody had destroyed on that hillside.
Oh.
And then it got to the to one point, he said he had a problem with it, and he took it out. And I quick went in to see what had changed, and I waited until he said it's back, and I went back to see what had changed. I still couldn't find it.
You did find it?
Well, on the picnic, he came along.
Okay.
And he cold, warm.
Okay.
Second group hunt I was ever on. And then we went to one with Maleth. And there were 6 of us sitting around trying to figure out how to get it. We couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I got down there, and we're all hunting and searching, and nobody could find it. I was moving some vines, and I saw it. Well, I quick put them back, and I backed out. And as soon as I backed out, he's standing there, and he saw me.
Oh, he was there. That's right.
And he says, well, look around and search someplace else real quick so they don't see
it. Yeah, that's one thing that's interesting about geocaching. Even though somebody, they put in a certain spot, they rate it a certain way. But depending on how you get there, the time of year, and whether somebody's covered it the same way, it could be a completely different experience. Mm-hmm. There was one in Emmenager that I didn't find. I ended up coming back to it, but I couldn't see it because there was just a leaf over the top of it. And I didn't know to move that leaf.
I felt real bad. What it all started with, I went to do Rich's cache there, and he had a tag hidden at a wishing well. Well, a storm had knocked the roof of the wishing well down. Or it's on top of the well. I couldn't find it. So I wrote an email to Rich, and he says, well, it's the roof of the well.
Was it
and I emailed back, and I said, I was on my knees, crawling around on the ground, looking up under that roof, and I couldn't find it. And he emails back, what do you mean, on your knees? Well, then he said, went out there, he says, oh, now I see why. The roof has crashed down. So he put another tag on a stump right nearby. Little did I know that he had taken 2 numbers and flip-flopped them. So here I go off after the final, and I follow the path, and it says it's 3/16 of a mile into the woods, and I can't find any way in there. So I just take off into the woods. I get all the way back in there. I'm in among all these homes on both sides, and it dead ends there. The hint says something about a fallen log, and there's all kinds of fallen logs down there. And I searched for an hour, and I couldn't find it, and it's getting dark because I went after work, and I'm in my work clothes. You know, I work in an office. And I said, well, the easiest way out in the dark here is follow the creek. Slipped in the mud, and down I went, covered with mud, and I get home, and I go in through my basement, and I throw all the clothes in the washing machine, and I come upstairs without any clothes on, and my wife says, why are you coming back from work with no clothes on? embarrassing. So I figured I was going to put a cache out there and hide it where Rich took me. So I went into the Sunset Hills City Hall there and talked to them. And it was, I think the problem was it was right near quitting time. And somebody wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. And they just kept saying, yeah, yeah, that's fine, that's fine. Just put it back there in the woods, it's good. So I did.
Oh.
And then the first person to find it emails me and says, I think that's on private property. And I didn't know about the St. Louis County maps that you can look at, the webpage. Mm. Looked it up and found out not only is it on private property, but I crossed about four others to get to it. So just about that time, I came down with the flu over the Christmas. So as soon as Christmas is over, I'm out there on a Monday morning with 103 temperature through the woods to pull this cache. Rich did his tags backwards, got me out there, and the city hall said yes when it wasn't.
Yeah, we've only found one of your four or five caches. And actually, that was one that Lane and I did together. It was a Bee Tree Park mm-hmm. with your
that was my first
box number one. Yeah. And you taken in like an old electrical meter.
Amp meter, volt meter.
Took out the guts and mm-hmm. left the box. And
it was a shame to take them apart. My work had five of these boxes. And they put them out on a table in cleaning and straightening things out. They didn't work anymore. And they put them out on a table and they said, anybody wants them, they're yours. At 5 o'clock, they're going to throw them away. So I waited till 5 o'clock and they were still there and I took them all. Now, the one in Bee Tree has been replaced because I made the mistake of waterproofing it inside and out. And it wouldn't let the wood breathe. And the high humidity got to it, and the wood just separated. Now, I was in Cliff Cave Park, but while I was there, this fellow comes walking down the path with a bright orange vest on and everything, and he stops and he looks at me, and finally he says, you're one of those geocachers, aren't you? Ends up, he's a trail watch person for the St. Louis County Parks Department. And we talked for about a half hour. He said they have had park meetings with the rangers in that area for Jefferson Barracks, Cliff Cave. They've talked with the rangers in there about geocachers, and they are very much in favor of it.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Additional eyes out there in the woods.
Additional eyes out there, get people out there to see, and they, you know, contact them if they see anything wrong. This is going to be my first MOGA this year.
Oh, you're going to go?
I'm not going to compete. But I want to go up there just to see what it's about and find some caches. And I'm just going the one day Saturday. So I'm just going to drive up.
It's going to be a lot of people running through the woods on Saturday. Sunday, I think you can find caches as well. And a lot of the people who are competing are probably just going to be getting over their hangover or packing up and getting ready to go home. You know, a lot of people from out of town.
Well, I'm going up there this Saturday. I wanted to see. I know it said something about the, for non-competitors, they give out the course B at 9 o'clock.
Mm.
So if I get up there about 7:30 or so and I get to see what's going on.
If you're there for all day Saturday, in the morning they'll, you know, announce a few things. And then the people who are doing geocaches will just go out. And I bet you if you wanted to, you'd probably end up hooking up with some people from out of town or nearby. Because you're all going to be, are you going to do that one? Oh, I'm going to do that one.
I watched some of the movies. I don't know if they're yours or somebody else's of the MOGAs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were neat to watch. I really got a kick out of watching the different people, and they had them all arranged around the pavilion.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, so-and-so from this state and from that state.
Yeah. Well, you probably just saw the little ones off the web.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
I can give you a copy of the whole, like, this may be too much, and it's, you know, kind of a nerdy thing, but a 2-hour DVD of the making of it, behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and of the people we're putting together, and then a 2-hour one more focused on the competitors. Mm-hmm. And it's full-blown DVD you can watch on your TV. The snippets you saw on the web were bits and pieces of that summarized enough so that people could get a good feeling.
And the night cache with the spider.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The fun thing about that was I was there when Doug and Jeff put that together, and they were talking about, you mm-hmm. know, it was based on plans that Tim and Tim, Pam, and Molly put together, and so they got all the equipment. I followed them out there, and it helped set up a little bit, but mainly had it set up. And then, you know, roll forward to the night when somebody's actually there. And thankfully, Lazy Lightning from Jefferson City had one of his Sony cameras that had the night vision on it. And he had it hooked up just at the right spot so that when they pull the ammo can out, it releases the line and drops the spider out. I'm like, man, it's perfect.
Do you want any more pizza?
Maybe I'll have one later.
Okay.
And they give us 45 minutes for work at lunch for work and that, but I don't know when I'm taking that. Usually you grab your sandwich and eat it and gobble it down in 10 minutes and you're back at work. You know, I've built launchers for the Tomahawk missiles for onboard Navy ships, or designed them. I'm a design engineer, mechanical design engineer. But right now I'm back at a company that I've worked at three different times. They build vending machines.
Here, well, you don't give away those secrets. Those are important industry secrets.
No, they're not. I always tell people that, you know, I design the part that takes your money and gives you nothing. Don't I do a good job?
Yeah, and actually when those things get stuck in a little corkscrew.
The spirals, yeah.
And a pounding machine to get it out. Can you guys do something about that?
Our latest, you're some of the old machines. For the past year and a half now, we've been producing machines that have electric eyes across the bucket when the product drops. If nothing drops, you can buy another selection or the same one again. And if it sticks in the spiral and it reads that nothing dropped, you hit your button again and it'll try to vend again and you may get two products.
Oh, okay.
But it's called SureVend. So if you see a machine that has SureVend written on it, one of ours at National Vendors, that's a good thing to try.
Okay. Since we've already started that conversation, well, I'll just quickly say that we're interviewing Jack Anderson, also known as Pandy Andy. From the point of design to the time it gets out to the public, how long is that gap usually?
About a year, sometimes longer, because we go through a lot of things for testing that take quite a while, and then you have tool makers. You know, the plastic injection molded parts may take 12, 16 weeks to build the tool. We have a test department that once something's built, they vend thousands and thousands of products through it, various types and sizes and everything to make sure it all works. My second time of employment back at National Vendors in the mid-90s, we designed a machine for Orida French fries that it had the oil impregnated in the fries, and they were flash frozen, and they were kept in a freezer in the top of the machine. When you made your purchase, it measured out a certain amount, and it dropped it into a hopper that went in, and hot air, 450 degrees, would cook these. And the cooking on them was very critical. 1 or 2 seconds too long, and they became too crispy. A second or two short, and they were still soggy. You had to hit that flash point for the oil. And when they came out, they were very good French fries. And I was the engineer on that job, and I spent weeks in our test lab in the back room doing nothing but buying French fries. Cup after cup. I got sick of the smell of it. Yeah. Every day I would go home, even though I wasn't eating them, I'd go home and just feel like an oily rag.
Yeah.
When I first started doing it, anybody could come down and get free fries. Mm-hmm. You know. But after about the third day, they were starting, man, that smells through the whole building.
Don't make me come down and eat your product.
It was great. All right, I had a contract for like 1,500 machines, and then they sold them wherever they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple of machines that stayed there at National Vendors on test, for maybe 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. We design them, manufacture them, everything. All the way distribution, ship them out, sales, different places across the country. So it's all within one facility there. We sell the machine. The operators, Cardinal Vending, different vending operators, they will buy the machines. What they usually like to do is be able to pay off the machine in 1 year. Mm. So the machine pays for itself in their profit over a bag of chips and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing, like candy bars, right now the profit for an operator in candy bar has gone way down because the candy bar companies have raised their prices. And the past two raises have not been justified in the cost of sugar and chocolate. The biggest profit is bags of chips and salty products. They pay the guy who they buy the product from. They have to pay for the machine, you know, their original purchase price for the machine. They also have to pay for their route men that go out and fill the machine, service the machine, take care of the machine, get the money out of it, put the money in, and also any vandalism.
Or the electricity to keep it running.
Some of them, yeah. Our years ago, National Vendor's big claim to fame was cigarette machines. And you still see them in some of the old-time bars around. You know, the old manual pull the light.
Yep.
Yes. I worked on those, too, back when I was in there.
So prior to working for the vending company, you were an engineer with other companies?
Different companies, all within St. Louis, government contractors, the old Unidynamics up in Ferguson, Crane Defense built missile launchers, towed array sonars, company down in, used to be down by the brewery, called Southwest Mobile Systems, they're now ESCO. They did vehicles, trailers for Patriot missiles. We had 400 trailers in a parking lot, ready to go, all painted camouflage. Government required them all to be brought in, stripped, painted, desert tan.
Right.
Shipped them to the eastern seaboard, put them on a boat. The boat got 100 miles out of port, and the war was over. Brought them all back, repainted them all camouflage. Your tax dollars paid for that. I started out as an artist, and I liked drawing mechanical drawings, precision drawings. And I went out to Merrimack Junior College, and I saw the teacher out there in the graphics arts department, and he told me to get out of his office. He told me to go see the technical illustration thaw, and I did, and I fell in love with it.
And CAD-CAM was probably a big step between the drawing and actually be able to do 3D rendering.
We worked on the board for a long time, and I ran across and saw this CAD modeling system called Pro-E, and it was a 3D modeling system, and I said, wow, it works the way I think. Because being in technical illustration, you did all these angled pictures of three-dimensional. I said, wow, that system works the way I think. And I had to learn it. So I was working at a company at that time that had the system there. They had a night shift that did drafting. And I came back in three nights a week, just like going to class. And I worked from 7 to midnight to teach myself the system. Mm-hmm. And finally, my boss came by one day at lunch. He says, you know how to operate that? I said, yes. He says, I got a job for you. Yeah, I progressed there through different CAD systems. Right now I'm working on Solid Edge.
So that when I was working at Scottrade, it took the guy to fill the soda machine up, it seemed like at least a half an hour to put all that stuff in there. Is that may be one innovation that would be a faster delivery system so the guy could deliver it faster?
If the guy could go up there and dump the box over and have it fall into the machine.
Mm-hmm. If I shake it and sort it out.
Yeah, they would love that. Canned sodas have to go in a certain way in order to not have problems. The bags of chips, if they're not loaded in there just right, can have problems and hang up, like you mentioned earlier. Yeah, the vending companies, they have the route men to fill up the product and the cups. Mm-hmm. Then they also have other people that go and take the money out because they don't trust those with the money. Then they also have other people that go, if there's something wrong, to repair on them.
Okay.
You know, they may pay 20 route men for products and 5 for money and 1 for fixing, you know, because they're the higher priced ones. So it's all about the buck. Speaking of ranting, one of the items I wanted to rant about this. I don't know who controls the SLAGA website.
Let me turn the recording off and you can tell me what it is that's wrong with it.
Is it you?
Yes, me.
So yeah, you're the guy behind all that.
Yeah.
You do a fantastic job.
Oh, thanks.
It always astounded me.
I'd love to have some help, but nobody is willing to take the time. Just content. I said, I'd just love to have people every once a week. You give it to me, I'll publish it. But it turns out, not only do I have to be a webmaster, but I have to be the content guy as well.
I'm from St. Louis, always been St. Louis, lived in Afton, 3/4 of a mile away from the house where I grew up in, and I've never been more than about 3 miles away from that house, at different homes and apartments and that. So I've lived there my whole life. Don't get to travel a whole lot. Married, got 2 boys. Boys are both older. One's got 2 children now. I've got a granddaughter and a grandson. I've taken them geocaching a couple times. They get a kick out of it, but they're up in Wentzville. Saw a couple newspaper articles about geocaching back in, I think it was 2004, in the summer. And I thought, wow, that'd be a great thing to do in the mornings while my wife is sleeping. And it mentioned the Geocaching 101 class. So I signed up for it and went out there and listened to the class and went out into the woods right after it with Leroy Goshawk. And the two of them took me out in the woods and found a cache. I said, this is for me. I went out and bought my GPS the same day, and I've been doing it ever since. My trouble is getting the time to do it.
Before geocaching, what would you do with that free time?
Oh, you're talking about my younger days. Oh, I did all kinds of different things. I played handball. I played touch football for 30 years in Francis Park in the city. We played every Saturday afternoon from September to April, all through the winter, as long as eight guys showed up. Didn't matter whether it was pouring down rain, snow, ice, we played. Budweiser National Touch Football Tournament, we got an invite. We went down there, and we got wiped out in the first match.
Oh, really?
And I realized I was too old for this when one of the guys on one of the other teams from some bar in Boston or whatever came in, stepped on my foot, hit me in the head, knocked me cold. I said, I'm too old for this.
Wow.
And when I saw this geocaching, it's just something I fell in love with.
And it gave you a chance to maybe go, or excuse to go out and get some fresh air and try something new.
And some of the places I've been to, I didn't even know existed. Unreal. I didn't know Emmenager Park was there.
That's another thing about geocaching is it's not just you discover new places, but a lot of people are conscious enough to, they know the history or to investigate the history and include that as part of the cache page.
RGS is good at that. Oh, he's fantastic. There's one in Jefferson Barracks that took us all over, and then you ended up at the old swimming pool for during the war. I learned so much about Jefferson Barracks, and I've lived in that area my whole life. I've got a Garmin Vista. I would love to upgrade to one of the newer ones that they're talking about, but I just haven't got to get that money out there.
Right.
And
right.
Justify spending it. I've used it since, it's only been a year and a half, but I can't justify going out and buying another one yet. Although I did justify going out and buying a PDA so I can get all the caches loaded into here and go out in the woods paperless. After about 6 months of dragging all the papers with me wherever I went and losing them in the woods and having to chase them down on a windy day.
Right.
So, I just went out and bought this this Dell Axiom. It took me almost 9 months before I learned how to project a waypoint. And the Gates of Doom was the first one I tried that on. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to do that.
After you found the first cache, did you want to put out your own cache?
Oh, immediately, right away. But, after going to the Geocaching 101 class, and a number of them out there said, find 50 till you know what it is and you see how people do it. Oh, I had my first one planned after about 20. But I waited till 50. A bison tube. What's a bison tube? They were at REI. So I went into REI to get me some bison tubes. I bought one of every color. So I've got them at home.
They are kind of nice and glittery. Like, oh,
aren't they,
cool.
though?
Nice
so
and
I've,
shiny.
I've got one of every color. Signature items in caches.
Okay.
I've made, I'd say, maybe 100 of them and placed them out there, like the one you have here.
Yeah.
Those were, I would make those about 9 of them. And it would take me in the evenings about an hour a night, and it would take me a week to make 9 of them.
So,
and I couldn't keep up with it. They're little layers of wood, cut out, glued together, and painted, that I made myself. When I thought of my name, you know, Pandy Andy Anderson, Andy, and I, some of the places where I've worked, people nicknamed called me Andy. And Panda, I'm kind of built like a panda bear, big and round. Most enjoyable one was snipers. In Francis Park, second class cache. Because I used to play handball there, and I played football there for years. My most hated cache is probably, it's not the hated cache, it's what happened to me. Booter upper. I went down that hill on my backside. I went looking for the cache, and I started down the pathway, and all of a sudden it's off to the side. Well, instead of going back up, I tried to traverse across, and I lost it. Huh. Everything you stepped on went downhill on that hill. Me, my stick went one direction, my GPS went another direction.
Oh, wow.
I ended up almost at the bottom of the hill before I could stop.
Slide or roll?
Sliding. By the time I stopped, I got a shelter of branches and rocks and everything kept piling on top of me.
Wow.
And then I gave up on it. I said, that's it. I'm getting out of here. And I grabbed my stuff and I climbed out. And I got up near the top and I'm stopping, catching my breath, leaning against a tree. Now I'm standing, and my eyes are about 5'8", or so, 5'6", and at eye level to me is the cache. And then I wrote this real nasty log saying that it should be pulled. Uh-huh. I mean, I was hurting. I hurt for a week afterwards. I had so many bumps and bruises on me. Luckily, no broken bones.
How do you feel about it now?
I don't have to go back in there again, do I?
No.
The best memory is the next one. The best view, the Moe's above it all, Cliff Cave. It scared me.
Mm-hmm.
My GPS said it was 15 feet off the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
Yes, and a fat man like me crawling over down the edge of that. But the view was fantastic from up there.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, all about Dandy Andy and his experiences in geocaching. And now you know, whenever you have a problem with a vending machine, you may or may not be able to blame Andy in it. So, well, that's it for this podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it, and we'll talk at you next time. Thanks, Jack, for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Paul. I enjoyed it very much.
There aren't a lot of places where they stay open late enough at night.
Right.
A lot of places, there are places where there's gates and they close
the gates. But you can still get into the parks.
Yeah.
I think it was Rich, the Minnehaha. He went there early in the morning, Saturday or something, and they never opened the gates.
Okay.
And he said he talked to some of one of the forest ranger people.
He knows everybody.
And they said, oh, yeah, we just forgot to open it. Just park right in front of the gates. It's no problem. And he made a comment. I wonder if the county police know about that. They'll ticket you for parking in front of the gate.
Yeah. Did you want to see what GSAC have any...
How do I get a hold of it? Is it something you purchase?
You can download it for free for like 30 days. It has a little nag screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's like $20 for a lifetime. You know, once you buy it, you have it forever, and it alerts you on updates. The nag screen, even though I think it, you go past 30 days, it'll just keep nagging you, but it takes longer and longer for the nag to go away.
When you download it, do you get the same version that you get if you paid?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not crippled or anything. You just get that nag screen.
I think all I'd like to get then is the web page.
Okay.
And then I'll play with it. I don't go into collecting the geo coins. That could get to be way too far gone. I think the MOGA one's going to be my first one I've ever gotten.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, we haven't done anything with the coins. In fact, we didn't know much about them until, I don't know, we went to one of the luncheons not too long ago, and they were talking
Christmas
about
party.
Them. And, yeah.
There were a couple of them
party,
brought their
yeah,
collections and
their
spread them out
yeah.
on the table.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, wow, there's a whole yeah. big thing out there with all
Sarah that. Did, and I think the 57 Chevy guy.
This concludes the Slaga podcast. For more information about the Slaga group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.